Welcome to Dudes on Movies, a podcast where dudes talk about movies. I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And today we're discussing our picks for the 2023 Oscars. That's the 96th Oscars, you know, if you're counting out there. Dave, you ready for this?
Yes, I'm ready.
We're leading up to it, doing lots of work.
That's right.
All right, everybody. So these are our picks. There are who we think should win.
Yes.
Not who we think the Academy is going to pick. This is who should truly win.
Yes, you know, exactly. Right? This is the real picks.
This is the real deal, folks. So we're going to cover the seven big categories, both writing categories, all four acting, directing, and best picture.
Yes.
So here we go, Dave, with the best actress in a supporting role. We have America Ferrera for Barbie, Jodie Foster in Naiad, Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks in The Color Purple, and Divine Joy Randolph in The Holdovers. Who's your pick for this?
I went with Emily Blunt in Oppenheimer.
All right.
She's excellent throughout as Kitty Oppenheimer. But for me, the best moment is when they cut to like that small conference room where they're interrogating Robert about his relationship with Jean Tatlock.
Yes.
And as he talks about it the way you would, giving the facts without getting into the details, we see what Kitty sees.
Yeah.
Which is Florence Pugh astride Cillian Murphy, you know.
That's my favorite scene, too.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding, folks.
Yes, of course.
It's a great scene. It really is. Yes. Yeah, I mean, her expression in that scene is wonderful.
Because, I mean, it doesn't matter what anybody's saying about national security or if, you know, Robert avails himself of Jean's communist leanings. All Kitty cares about in this moment is that her husband cheated on her.
Exactly.
You know, and she's right to feel that way. Emily Blunt just sits there getting increasingly agitated, and she's fantastic.
And it's a wonderful example of not speaking.
Yes.
Right?
Just,
it's all body language.
Acting without saying anything. Yeah, that takes talent.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's awesome.
That's awesome, man. I'm going to surprise the hell out of you with this, Dave.
Okay.
I saw The Color Purple in theaters. A musical, everybody, which I famously am opposed to.
Wow.
My pick is Danielle Brooks.
Get the hell out
of... She blew my mind.
Dude.
In this film.
Okay.
She is so expressive and sincere with everything she does. Like, you just feel like every ounce of joy and pain that she has throughout this film. And whether she's acting or singing, especially when she's singing.
Yeah, like, of course.
Her face just lights up the room or makes you feel pain. I love it so much. Like when she's singing Hell No, especially, I was just like, damn, girl. Like,
Hell No is an electrifying song.
Dude,
yeah.
And she's amazing in it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how much I was affected by this performance, right. Dave. Like, I'm sure I just blew your mind.
You totally blew my mind.
I remember telling you, like, I don't want to watch the movie. I don't want to see a musical.
I know.
And you're like, dude, it's good. I'm like, I know it's good. Dude, I came out of that reeling, like, really?
So
I cannot believe I liked her performance.
So is Danielle Brooks a gateway drug for you? Are you going to start doing musicals?
I doubt it.
Okay.
But, like,
okay.
But I was just shocked. I'm like, man, I just loved it so much.
Well, fair enough.
Her face, just the way she expressed things.
Yes.
Just like, man.
She's awesome.
She's not putting up with anyone's shit. I just loved it.
I know. She's an awesome character, too, in the story, obviously. And,
yeah.
You know, and yeah, Danielle Brooks, she's great.
Yeah, it was wonderful, dude. Let's move on now.
Yes.
Best actor in a supporting role. You have Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction, Ryan Gosling in Barbie, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, and Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. It's my turn to go.
Right.
I had a tough time with this one, and I ultimately settled with Ryan Gosling for Ken in Barbie.
Tell me more.
I think that the film is quite something overall, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's this weird fantasy world that's just absurd.
Yes.
But he plays Ken so straight. Even with all this ridiculousness happening around him and just with the script in general, and he's so funny and like played down, even though the shit he says about like horses and patriarchy is insane. Like, I feel like he goes beyond this level of like acceptable, like, okay, he like, I can buy this performance that like he comes full circle to like, I'm accepting it again. It's so weird, dude. It's like, when you get so hungry that you don't become hungry anymore, it's so weird. I think this role is so much more challenging than anyone realizes to pull this off. I just, I loved it. I found myself laughing so much at Ken, even when I didn't find him funny.
Yeah.
I think he was awesome. I just was unexpectedly loving what he did.
He is perfect in this role. And even if I'm Just Ken isn't as galvanizing as hell no.
Yes, I did not like that part.
Oh, okay. All right.
When they did a song and dance? No, thank you.
See, that was my favorite part of the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, who do you have?
So I stayed in the same film. I went with Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer.
Ah, okay.
As the movie progressed and his character, Strauss, becomes, you know, more prominent, it starts to almost become his movie after a while.
It does.
And that's a great thing, because I think Robert Downey knows that this is kind of the role of a lifetime. And he was the star of one of the most financially successful series of films ever made. And that rocketed him to, you know, like the biggest movie star in the world for a while, you know. But this role, this part, is kind of what makes actors want to go to work, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's so much to that character, and it's, of course, within a massively ambitious historical epic. It's great work, and I'm so happy that he's taking these kinds of roles again, like he did when he first started acting about 40 years ago.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I hope he does more of this kind of stuff.
Me too.
Because he's past the Marvel stuff now, right. You know?
Iron Man's dead, and he can just focus on being an actor now.
Yeah, he can do stuff. Yes. He's off the leash.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's excellent in the movie, right? Like,
right.
That character is very complicated.
I know.
More so than you would think.
Like, I know.
There's a lot of layers to him.
And I mean, like, I didn't know all the history of Robert Oppenheimer going into the movie, so I was taken aback when I found out that, like, you know, Strauss is like, the betrayer, essentially.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it was great for me to just kind of sit there and, like, you know, take it all in. And I was very impressed with Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, awesome.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to best writing for adapted screenplay. You have Cord Jefferson for American Fiction, Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach for Barbie, Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, Tony McNamara for Poor Things, and Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest. Dave, you're up.
Okay. I'm going with Cord Jefferson for American Fiction. Whenever you're being told a story, and that story features satirical elements that implicate you, as long as the story is fair and honest, the best reaction you can have is to listen and to try and understand why this portrayal exists.
Yes.
What makes this movie unique, obviously, is that, like, the target isn't the usual right-wing nut jobs. Instead, it's liberal white people who think they're allies. But they're too often running their mouths to truly understand anything. And that's a stance that risks alienating people who proclaim solidarity. But if those people are who they truly claim to be, then they'll understand where they need to improve.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this movie so much, and when I found out this was Cord Jefferson's first screenplay and his directorial debut, I was really taken aback.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Holy crap. And one last thing about it, I recently listened to an interview with him where he talked with Sam Sanders on the Vibe Check podcast. I'd encourage everybody to please find this, because Cord is not just a smart guy. He is kind and generous.
Yeah.
And you'll learn a lot from listening to him talk about working in film and television. It's kind of essential stuff.
Yeah, dude. And these white people are like one step away from being get out, you know?
I know.
It's pretty close.
Exactly. I know. It's really haunting watching it happen, because you know it can devolve there at
exactly
any second.
Exactly right.
Yes.
You're going to go into the sunken place real soon.
God damn, man. It's just, it's so hard to watch, you know? But it,
yeah.
We have to watch it.
We have to watch it,
right?
Dave. And you know what? Cord Jefferson is my pick also.
Nice.
American Fiction.
Dude, all right.
Is so amazingly well written. I feel like all the characters behave in ways that are a little unexpected, but it's still real and true to the character. And it makes sense. It's natural. And you mentioned kind of the subtle humor in way. Like, this is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. But it's not filled with jokes, right? It's all subtle. It's just amazingly well done. Like, it does have one of the best jokes ever in it, actually, is when they're voting on who should win the literary award.
Uh-huh.
And the two African-Americans are saying, no, we don't want to vote for this because it's just patronizing and stuff. And the three white people are like, no, we need to vote for it because black voices need to be heard. It is the best joke ever written.
It's just, you're absolutely right.
That's exactly what the whole movie's about.
I know.
It's so good.
And I love Jeffrey Wright's face in that moment where he just looks up. He's like, are you people kidding me? Him and Issa Rae are just like,
yeah.
They're not like jaws on the ground, but they're just kind of like, are you fucking for real?
I know. And you expected those two people to be adversarial here.
Yes.
But they're on each other's side.
Right. Because they had argued before the white people
like
came
Like I said,
in.
It's unexpected things are going on.
Yeah.
But it all makes so much sense.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It's the best adapted screenplay.
Excellent, man. and one more quick thing about American Fiction. I don't know if you noticed, but like the literary agent who Thelonious is always on the phone with is played by Miriam Shore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Itzhak from Hedwig and the Angry
Hedwig.
Inch. Holy shit. You know, great stuff.
Pretty awesome.
Yep.
Anytime you see some Hedwig around, I'm there.
Exactly. Man.
See, why do I like that musical? Maybe because it's a rock and roll musical.
Probably it's that kind of music.
Yeah, yeah. That could be it.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. So we're moving on to Best Writing Original Screenplay. We have Justine Triet and Arthur Harari for Anatomy of a Fall. Bradley Cooper and Josh Singer for Maestro. Sammy Birch and Alex Mechanic for May, December. Celine Song for Past Lives. And David Hemmingson for The Holdovers. My pick, Dave, I'm going to go with Celine Song for Past Lives.
Very good.
Also someone who's had their first screenplay.
Yes.
Which is amazing. I've never seen a love story told quite this way that was told from this kind of perspective and this much maturity.
Right.
It's like a typical setup of two young people who kind of like each other. It's like a crush and could have became something, but they're torn away from each other. So there's like a planted seed of what would have happened if we stayed, you know, friends over that time, but we couldn't.
Right.
And they later try to kind of rekindle that. But then they question, why are we doing this? What's the outcome if we pursue this? And then we catch up again later in life and see what's going on. And Nora is married to Arthur now. And like, she's married to this white guy who's the fallout of it all is just so, it's handled so maturely and atypically, not what you see in a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you expect a lot of conflict. The conflict comes from the people's true emotional reactions, not from fuck this guy, that's my wife,
right,
you know,
right.
Stay away from her.
I agree, man.
There's a scene when they are in bed together, Nora and Arthur, and he's talking about his fears and jealousy, and they just talk honestly and open together, and like, they're not even really supporting each other, but they're there and listening.
Yes.
And they realize it's important to talk about these things.
Right.
Even if it's not what you want to hear.
Right.
And that kind of mature relationship is something we need to see more of.
Dude, I couldn't have said it better. Well said. I couldn't have said it better myself. And Celine Song for Past Lives is my pick as well.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, I mean,
not hell no.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
There you go. I mean, that it's also Celine Song's debut screenplay and film.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just a real stunner, you know. And I remember seeing the trailer and thinking it looked like an intriguing movie, the kind I'm usually enthusiastic about. But when you've seen as many movies as we have, it's hard for any film to be unpredictable. And yet this movie went in directions I never saw coming.
Yeah.
Its study of relationships, like you said, is so mature and sensitive. And when the American husband talks about being the unsympathetic white guy.
Yeah. The meta commentary.
Yes.
Yes.
Such a thing could, like, call attention to itself in a bad way, and it doesn't.
Right.
Like, instead, you just, it's a perfect bow on what the actual issue at hand is, and it's like, this movie knows itself.
It does.
You know, and, like, I love also just, like, Nora's character, how she is entertaining the notion of this happening, not in that, like, she has any feelings for
like Hae-sung.
Hae-sung, yes, yeah. Yes, thank you. But that she's allowing him like back into her life in some way.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when she just breaks down crying after he leaves.
After that long shot of her walking back down the street.
Yes. Because it's just every emotion coming together like that.
I fell apart just.
I know.
Just like Greta Lee did. Yes. I was like, no.
Yeah.
I've been waiting to talk about this movie since November,
dude.
Dave.
I know. I know, man.
I knew as soon as I saw it.
Yeah.
This is going to be my pick.
Yeah.
Unless something else blew me away.
And I also just like, Arthur, it's so nice to see the guy who knows how good he's got it.
Yeah.
You know?
He's punching above his weight class
totally,
here.
And he knows it. He knows it so well. He just is very like loving toward her because he knows like how good he's got it. You
right.
know?
And he accepts that these two people need to have this closure in their lives to move on.
Yes.
Even as uncomfortable as this is, sitting there, not understanding a word they're saying.
I know. Yeah. Letting that happen too. Right.
Allowing it to play out.
Right.
Yes.
And being secure enough to like, we punching above his weight, as we said, but he also like, he knows that he's a loving man. Yeah. And that she is in many ways lucky to have him too, because he's a nice guy. Even if she is way out of his league, it's still just like, you know, he's not insecure about the relationship.
Right. He trusts her.
Right. It's nice.
Yeah. There's another great scene when we should just do this movie, I guess. Yes. There's another great scene.
Welcome to the episode on Past Lives.
Right.
Everybody.
Yeah. Everybody. She's brushing her teeth in the bathroom.
Right.
And he asks her if she finds him attractive. And she like takes a second before she responds and says, I don't know. I was like, that is like the most true response.
I know.
Like, she doesn't know if she actually finds him attractive or if it's just the situation that is attractive to her or what. She doesn't know what's happening.
Can you imagine being that honest in life?
Yeah. Like, you know? Oh my God, dude.
Right.
I'm like, all right, this is the scene when Arthur walks up. No, he just accepts it.
Exactly. And he goes on brushing his teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thus concludes the Past Lives episode,
there
everybody.
There you go, dude. Right.
All right. So let's move on to Best Actress in a Leading Role.
Okay.
We have Sandra Hüller from Anatomy of a Fall, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, Annette Bening in Naiad, and Emma Stone in Poor Things. Is this your pick?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I went with Carey Mulligan and Maestro.
Okay.
I try to think of myself, or I like to think of myself anyways, like being very well-informed and, you know, but I felt foolish when I saw this movie because I didn't know anything about Felicia Montalegre.
Me neither.
Just never heard of her. And now that I do, I'm of course better off, but more importantly, Carey Mulligan is exceptional in this role.
Dude's favorite.
Yes. God, she's so great.
Yep.
And there are two scenes in particular in this movie where she's especially strong. One's the confrontation between Felicia and Leonard Bernstein, where she essentially tells him that although she still acknowledges and respects his orientation, she's being neglected and she's not honoring their arrangement.
So when they're in the bedroom?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. And despite Bradley Cooper being awesome, she really stands out.
Yeah.
You know?
They're both amazing.
They're both unbelievable. Yeah. And the other scenes are the ones where Felicia is dying, of course, you know, because if you've ever lost someone to a debilitating disease, watching them like deteriorate while also you're trying to spend quality time and do normal stuff and you know, talk about superficial things.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing more heartbreaking.
It's so prolonged too.
I know.
There's the scenes when her friends come over to talk to her, and she just doesn't have the energy.
She's trying to like engage with him and just, oh, is that right? Oh, you saw so-and-so, you know?
And the small talk's not working, and they all realize it,
right.
And it gets so awkward, and man.
And just, you know, Carey Mulligan, we've seen her in Promising Young Woman, where she plays who she plays, and now we see her in like, she's the fanciest lady you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You know? I mean, just like upper crust of like, you know, like a born like astride a horse, like doing dressage.
I know, you know? Right? There's a great scene also when she's in the giant shadow of Leonard Bernstein.
Yeah.
And it just like, she's looking at him from behind this like stage left or whatever. And the shadow is just representative of
course
how she has to live her life.
Yes.
And just her standing there, and she's so small in the center of the frame, and the shadow fills the picture.
Yes.
It's a wonderful shot.
Right.
Yeah, well, good pick, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I am going with... This was the hardest one for me to pick. I think pretty much everyone is deserving. Annette Bening probably got the lowest for me. She was good, but
yeah.
Everyone else, I was like 1A, 1B. I know. Everyone else is amazing.
They were all good picks.
There's always one category a year, Dave, where I struggle.
Right.
I settled on Emma Stone.
Okay.
I went with Emma Stone for Poor Things. I don't understand how she maintained this nature on set.
Okay.
If you guys haven't seen the movie, her performance is zany.
Yes,
right? Like,
zany,
that's a perfect way to explain it.
That's the word, right.
I guess this is how I would act if my unborn child's brain was put into my head. You know?
God, like, man, what a story.
By Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
I mean, there's only one man to do it. It's Dafoe.
It's Dafoe, yeah. You know he's up to no
but,
good.
Dude, she's just so... The character is a child growing up and learning about the world, basically,
yeah.
Right? Like, but, like, she's so curious and whimsical... And surreal and innocent, and it's just, I can't believe she can like balance all of this, and the way she expresses it is like she almost has a blank face throughout the whole movie,
right?
Even in the scenes when she's like having graphic sex with everyone, like,
I know
she's just kind of existing,
and even as she like progressively gets more intelligent. Cause like, you know, in the beginning, how she's, you know, she is who she is and she's like,
yeah.
Kind of essentially like giving monosyllabic answers to everything. And,
right.
And she's hitting people and
yeah.
She's like, she's a toddler.
Right.
And then by the end when she's like working at the brothel and, she's enjoying sex.
Right.
And, she's now like very well read.
I love
and,
it.
You know, and I mean, she's talking straight up to these guys, you know, is that smell you?
She says,
you know,
what she's thinking.
All
unfiltered.
The time. Yeah.
No, there's absolute candor here.
Right, right.
She is just not holding anything back. Not because she's being rude.
No.
That's just how she is.
Yeah.
She hasn't learned the fucking idiotic politeness of society.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, right.
She's been untainted by these things, which is kind of partly Defoe's reasoning of doing it to
yeah.
see... How this it's hard to explain because this movie's hard to explain.
It is, yeah.
How this like untarnished mind will see the world,
right?
How a child would see how a 1 year old kid would see the world if it could express itself as an adult. It's weird,
yeah.
Or maybe like a 4 year old kid,
and that's why it's
yeah.
Also like very troubling, and
yeah.
You know it's. Obviously, the experiment is monstrous. No one should do
yes,
this.
Yes.
You know,
right.
But you know, we're watching an artwork of fiction, so we get to like you know ponder you know what it would be like.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love the little animals walking around with like the
yes.
dog's head on a duck's body
oh my
and
God.
Stuff. It's so weird.
One of them really grossed me out. Is I think when like Mark Ruffalo like wakes up and that like pig dog is on his chest.
Yeah.
I was like, oh God.
This movie is just batshit insane.
It is, yeah.
It's the craziest thing Yorgos Lanthimos has ever done.
The art direction is really, like, I wish I had such a powerful imagination, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah. All right, cool, let's move on
right?
to Best Actor in a Leading Role. We've got Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction, Bradley Cooper in Maestro, Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer, Colman Domingo in Rustin, and Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers. My pick, I had a few choices too. I'm going to ultimately go with Paul Giamatti for
okay.
The Holdovers.
Nice.
I just loved his bitterness of the character. And I think Giamatti is the perfect casting for this guy.
Yeah.
He expresses the fatherly nature with the kid. And even when it's abrasive, it feels loving in ways. He blends the right amounts of like the arrogance and the compassion and the pathos.
Yeah.
This is a pathetic character in many ways. Although he has a lot of redeeming qualities that we find out throughout the movie. I think he just holds himself the way he moves his body. He's got like a fake prosthetic eye in too
yes.
while he's doing this. His body is perfect. That Giamatti physique
yes.
is perfect for this character. Like, I just, he's so good in this role, man.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I had to pick him. I just loved him.
He was born to play this character.
Yes,
no doubt.
Definitely.
Yeah. Paul Giamatti rules. Like, I just love him and everything. And I love too that, like, I didn't know who he was before I saw Howard Stern's Private Parts.
Yeah.
I think that's the first thing I ever saw him in. But I was aware of his family because his dad was the commissioner of Major League Baseball when I was 12 years old. He's the guy who, A. Bartlett Giamatti, was the president of Yale. And he was hired to be the commissioner of baseball. And he is the one who ousted Pete Rose.
Okay.
And he have unfortunately died of a heart attack like 2 months after he banned Pete Rose for life. So yeah, Paul Giamatti lost his father at a young age, which is unfortunate, but he is a consummate actor.
Yeah.
And like, this movie is hilarious, and he the exact right blend of drama and comedy.
Yeah. So who's your pick, Dave?
I agonized over this category big time.
Yeah.
Like, they're all so good.
Yeah.
And I ended up going with Colman Domingo in Rustin.
Yeah.
We're supposed to, of course, judge the performance based on the movie that we're watching, but it's impossible for me sometimes to not compare an actor's work from one film to another.
Yeah.
You know, and
I know, right?
You know what I'm saying?
He's in The Color Purple this year and killed it.
I don't think any actor showed the range that Colman Domingo did this year. Because when you put his performance of Bayard Rustin up against what he did as Mister in The Color Purple, you realize what it means when we say that an actor disappears into a role.
Yeah, definitely.
You know? I mean, this Rustin performance isn't just him doing a different voice. He's capturing like a whole spirit of an important but often forgotten figure. And he also made me realize something about myself, because whether it's Bayard Rustin or James Baldwin or Hannah Arendt, when I see a serious, fancy intellectual with their arms folded and one hand holding a cigarette aloft, they've just got me, because I want to hear more of their story, you know? And Colman Domingo, what a performance.
Yeah. Yeah. He kills it, dude.
Yeah.
Like, he captures the body language and just the cadence in his speech.
Yeah.
It's almost musical in a way.
It's perfect. Musical. There it is. Yes.
But yeah, like, such range compared to from this and Color Purple. Like, and also Sandra Hüller in two great movies this year too.
Man,
two Sandra great Hüller. Performances
I know.
From her.
And, yes.
She was in The Zone of Interest also, and in that there's a scene in that where she tells the help that she could have her husband kill her.
Yep.
Like, out of nowhere, I'm like, damn, girl. Like,
I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
You turned real quick.
She's as ruthless as her Nazi husband.
She was my 1B for actress, actually.
Yes.
In Zone of Interest.
I know.
Or in Anatomy of a Fall.
Right.
All
right.
So now it's time to move on to Best Directing, Dave. We've got Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese in Killers of the Flower Moon, Christopher Nolan in Oppenheimer, Yorgos Lanthimos in Poor Things. In Poor Things, like, he's acting in it, you know?
For Poor Things.
Jonathan Glazer for The Zone of Interest.
There you go.
All right. Who do you got, Dave?
I went with Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall.
Okay.
This movie has so many set pieces, but they were often still self-contained. You have the opening sequence with the interview and the fall itself, punctuated by about 10 minutes of PIMP.
Bacchaeo Rhythm and Steel Band's cover, man.
Yes. Then there's the aftermath of the investigators at the crime scene and lots of interesting angles. And then there's the trial itself.
Yeah.
And we're all suckers for courtroom drama, but this does not go anywhere an American audience is used to. And the camera moves just enough for it to never feel static while the prosecutor makes his case that Sandra Hüller unquestionably murdered her husband. This was a hard movie to watch because it's not just an innocent person hoping not to be convicted. It's a pretty righteous indictment of the system itself, because the prosecutor's actual job description is not to find the truth, but to convict people.
Yep.
Whether they did it or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's one other aspect of it that is a credit to just like European filmmaking or foreign filmmaking in general. the ease with which these actors slide in and out of languages.
Yeah.
Fluently. I'm just so taken aback.
Yeah, Sandra Hüller's, she speaks German, French, and English in this movie.
And she plays a character who, like, is trying to learn French, but her French is, to my ears, sounds excellent.
It sounds great to me.
Yes.
But, like, she is not fluent,
she's not
apparently
100% fluent.
Yeah.
But, like, at one point, the Swan Arlo, the other investigator, like, they're talking about the crime at one point, and she goes, well, is it okay if we speak English? And he goes, oh, yeah, sure, English is fine.
Yeah.
He says it just like I did.
Yeah.
He was speaking French 5 minutes ago, and, like, without an accent, he can just go right into English. No yep. sweat.
Yep. That's the best part about the movie.
Yes.
Like, I'm blown away by it.
We're doing it wrong in this country, everybody.
We are. We're doing it wrong. Yeah, the good pick, Dave.
Thank you.
That was also my pick for best directing.
Oh, nice.
Anatomy of a Fall has no flaws. Right. The performances, the staging.
Yeah.
The shot choices, everything. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
You mentioned, when you first saw it, you mentioned it in the What Have You Been Watching section about the courtroom scenes. Like, how good they are. And, dude, you were right. Like, these are amazing. Like,
yes.
They're so unlike anything we've seen. Maybe it's just American audiences, like you just said,
right,
haven't seen it. But they're so intimate and serious and not showy. But you said the camera moves just enough where you don't get bored or stagnant.
Right.
And they're not overly dramatized.
Like, that's
important. There's no one yelling, like, you're out of order.
Exactly.
You know, stuff like that.
You're
it feels grounded. Like, just the whole film from start to finishes.
I know.
It's wonderful. It's put together so perfectly.
Wow.
Yeah. I think we've got three categories this year far, Dave.
Three common picks. Yeah, amazing.
All right. So now it's time for the grand finale with Best Picture. There's like 9 of them this year, or 10 or something. I don't know. But let's count.
Okay.
We have American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, The Holdovers, and The Zone of Interest.
That's 10 films.
10 films, everybody. Some good ones on here.
Yeah.
I ultimately ended up on American Fiction
being
the best picture of the year.
Very well.
We already talked a lot about how great we think it is. I think it's incredibly subtle and the satirical look at race and stereotypes and expectations, family, compromising on your beliefs.
Yeah.
Just all this stuff is amazing. It felt fresh. I already said it was the funniest movie I've ever seen, even though it's not a comedy. it's filled with so many situations that you don't expect to happen, and they play out in ways that you don't expect them to play out, although they all make sense. And I keep saying it's so funny, but the humor isn't even like what it's about.
Right.
Like, it's super funny, but that's like the secondary purpose of the scene. That's like so hard to do.
Right.
Like, it's not the intent of the scene, but it's funny still. I mean,
you could say a lot through comedy.
Yeah, you can. You really can.
Right.
And all the performances are great. I love the ending.
Yes.
But they do the Wayne's World thing.
I know.
End, and then it ultimately ends. Jeffrey Wright's like, I know how it should end. And the SWAT team comes in, and he's receiving the award, and he's holding his statue, his golden statue. And they're like, he's got a gun. And they blow him away. I'm like, dude, this is such a fucking period at the end of the sentence.
I know.
It is so good.
I know. and I love, too, how Cord Jefferson decided to borrow Adam Brody from Diablo Cody as his asshole white guy.
I know.
I was like
it.
There he is again.
He keeps showing up on our show
amazing.
As assholes.
Exactly. Right? And starring as asshole number one, Adam Brody.
Yep.
Oh, excellent.
All right, Dave. Well, what do you got?
I went with Past Lives.
Very close for me.
Yes. And I mean, like, look, I wasn't prepared for how good this movie was going to be or for how much it was going to move me. You know? It had so much heart. And often when movies go for this much emotion, it can come off as self-serious. But this movie made it work with a perfect balance, and I just loved it. And it's just such an original story. And And then weaving like modern technology into a story sometimes can like make the movie feel dated.
Yeah.
You know, like years from now, it's not going to be that way. Because like the FaceTime scenes with the two actors, like it's got real emotion and they're actually talking to each other. It's not, it's like they're in the room together.
Yeah.
You know? And I love the aspect too of like when she tells him, I'm supposed to be, you know, like moving up in the world, and instead I'm pricing plane tickets to Seoul, and I can't do that right now. I was like,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
That,
you know,
that breakup, even though they're not boyfriend and girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty rough.
It is.
Yeah. This movie hit me so hard. Like, there's very few movies that have just destroyed me. Like, this one did it.
Right.
I remember the first time I watched Ozu's Tokyo Story.
Oh,
yeah. At the end of that film, I was dead, like, with emotion.
Right.
This affected me that way.
Oh,
like, to compare this film to Tokyo Story and how emotionally impactful, that is something.
And it's Celine Song's first movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope, I don't know. I just hope I can watch this movie a million times before I die. It's so good.
I know. And you know what, too? Honestly, agreed. And if she never makes another movie, that's fine, too. Because she's already made the best one.
That's awesome.
Right.
All right, cool. Everybody, that was awesome.
Yes.
Let us know your picks.
Right.
Comment on social media, anywhere. Send us emails. You know, let us know what you think. Maybe we can put up some polls online.
Yeah, we could. That's right. Yeah. Did you have any anything else you wanted to like highlight or touch on, some of the people who weren't nominated or anything?
I didn't make a snub list this year,
okay.
But if you have some,
yeah,
go for it.
Yeah, just a few here. Antoine Reinhart's in Anatomy of the Fall. He was the prosecutor.
Yeah.
Really the kind of
excellent.
Yeah, he really carries the movie for a good portion of it toward the end.
Yeah.
And then Swan Arlo, also in Anatomy of a Fall, he's the friend, the investigator. And Natalie Portman in May December, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's that one scene where she's like talking about what it's like to film a sex scene, and the 17-year-old, like, he's a smart ass, but all of a sudden he's just like struck dumb by this.
Yeah, in the classroom.
Yes.
I love that scene.
So good.
And she's just being so open with it.
Yeah.
And well, Charles Melton in that movie was awesome too.
I know.
He was awesome.
So good. Yeah.
Such a hard character to play.
And like Julianne Moore and Todd Haynes are becoming like the frequent collaborators you know, Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese.
Yep.
Yeah, really cool.
Speaking of May December real quick.
Yeah.
One of the great, probably should have won best writing just for this.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie Portman is on a broadcast vet drama called Nora's Ark.
Yes.
You should win an Oscar just for that.
Nice. Yeah. Pretty damn cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And then Zac Efron and Lily James in The Iron Claw. Nicolas Cage in Dream Scenario. Greta Lee in Past Lives, obviously.
Yes, I expected that.
Yes. Erica Alexander in American Fiction. Rupert Everett in Napoleon, and Fantasia Barrino in Color Purple.
Margot Robbie is up there.
I know, exactly. Yeah. That was surprising that she didn't get nominated. That Ryan Gosling got nominated and she didn't. That was surprising.
Yeah, I saw something online. They're like, that was kind of the whole point of the movie.
I mean, it was just like, it was so, like, how could they not see that?
Right.
You know?
Yep.
Wow.
We're doing patriarchy.
I guess it just exists and they don't even know it. They're that old, you know?
All right. So that wraps things up. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcasts. Rate it, review it, and most of all, share it. It gets more dudes listening to the dudes. And you go to dudesonmovies.com and find anything you need right there.
Yes. And we're on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Look for Dudes on Movies. And our email address is dudesonmovies@gmail.com.
That's right. Hit us up on any of those methods. Let us know your thoughts on this year's Oscars. You know, it could be your predictions, or after the awards, let us know what you think of the ceremony, who won, all that kind of stuff. Anything, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Just contact us about anything.
Just tell us some stuff.
Tell us, you know, we need some contact here.
Right.
All right, so until next Oscar season, Dave, I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And we'll see you next time.